You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Hello, and here we go again with another great episode of The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And although I always love talking to the players, I'd definitely be lying if I didn't say some of my favorite episodes are with the coaches. And that's what I have the pleasure of doing today. Welcome to our show, a coach that's been successful no matter where he's gone. And now he's back with the team that he won the EuroLeague in 2013 and has them in a playoff position this year. Yorgos Bartsokas, my man, welcome to The Crossover. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thank you very much for the invitation. Thank you very much.
Of course, dude. We've been trying to do this for like 4 months now, man. You're harder to get than the president, you know?
No, I'm sorry, but first of all, I'm kind of a little bit low profile, but you know the schedule is really tough.
Yeah. Yeah, you told me when you guys played here, you said, you know, I'm not coaching to do this. I'm not the kind of guy to talk for like 3 hours.
No, the meeting is really great on this. You know, that's why I told you.
You remember what I told you? I said, that's good. I only get paid by the podcast. I don't get paid for time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how's everything with you? Everything going good?
Everything goes good, yes. So far.
So far. That's always the question. So, you know, the whole issue of the crossover, it's a little bit of story about your life. And when did you start playing basketball? Because you're right around my age. You're a month older than I am. I saw when I did our research, and you were there during like the most important parts of Greek basketball.
Yeah, I was. I started to play like in the age of 12 years old. You know, probably 1977. I started basketball, and I had not a huge career. You know, I had a lot of injuries with my knees, and I stopped playing basketball during the age of 27. So my career in basketball was only in Marousi as a player. Then I started being coach in the, probably you know, from small divisions in Greece, a lot of years as a head coach. Then I became assistant coach of Panagiotis Giannakis in Marousi. Marousi was one of the best teams in the domestic league, in Greek league. I remember we finished second and we played the final against Panathinaikos. And then I started my career as a head coach in different teams.
How difficult was it for you as a player, with a player's mentality, to go through? Because you had some severe knee injuries, I believe, right?
Yes.
And back then, in our day, a knee injury was like, you know, it's not the same as it is today. A player injures his knee today, and in 7 months, he's usually back playing again at full strength. When we were playing at that age, the medical, it wasn't as advanced, I guess. And knee injuries, the minute you had a knee injury, you were like on the blacklist for a lot of coaches and teams.
Yes, correct. Now everything looks much easier for the players, although that the schedule is really tougher. You know, we're talking about a lot of games, close to 80, 85 games per season. And we didn't have this tough schedule. But as you said, one serious injury on your knee was kind of not the end of your career, but you can say that you fall one level down, you know. And, you know, for your mentality as an athlete, as a player, a basketball player, it's always tough to overcome this and to get back and to win the, you know, the trust of your coach, of your teammates, of the media, of everybody. So when I started having problems with my knees, I started thinking what I can do to stay in the sport that I really love, like basketball. And the only thing that I decided to do is being a coach.
Because you had various knee issues. It just wasn't one, right? You tore both ACLs, right?
Yes, both.
I don't mean to laugh, but it's you see so many players that go through their careers, and some of them are just injury prone, and it just seems to happen. It doesn't matter what they do, or they just seem to get hurt. Did you feel like that was you? Did you feel like, man, this is just bad luck? This is going to be the rest of my career, and I need to move on.
I was in a kind of depression, you know, because like everybody in this position, you know, I was feeling really, really bad. You know, whenever you are out, you were a player, and you know, whenever you are in an injury list, watching your teammates playing basketball, it's really sad, you know. So I start thinking that probably my career is going to finish early. I know it's not easy, you know. This, and I spoke with a lot of people with the same, you know, problems, and everybody was feeling the same. You know, it's not easy to overcome this.
At what point as a player, like you mentioned that you started to think about other things, another future, but you wanted to stay in the game. Like, to me, when I played back in college, if I would have never made it to the pros, I studied business management, but I never actually thought about being a coach. It never went through my mind. So was there a transition from the time you got hurt to where you started to study the game more and you looked at the game in a different way?
Listen, since I was 20 years old, I started being coach also. I was a player, of course, but I started being in a mini basketball, you know, we're talking about age, mm-hmm. like 10 years old kids. And, you know, always I had this this approach about basketball. You know, I was always thinking from coach's perspective, you know. Maybe it was by luck. Maybe I built up this perspective because I started thinking that I will not have so bright future as a player. And probably it was this. I don't remember because there are a lot of years ago, you know, but this transition, as you said, is a really difficult and painful process, you know, that the thing that you love, because playing basketball is always the best, is much better than coach a basketball team. Playing basketball is fantastic, it's great, you feel like a kid, even if you are a professional. And, you know, I started thinking what I can do to stay in the sport that I love, and probably I have the ability maybe to do something. And I started thinking as a coach, you know.
I always think the one thing that I've always said to myself, because I told you I studied business management, I barely graduated from university. I was one of those students. I was more of an athlete than a student, one of those guys. If you look back now from the time that you started to play, from the time you injured your knee, and now you're coaching, it's been your entire life. What do you think you would be doing today if it wasn't for coaching?
Listen, I've been in the University of Athens. I studied politics. But to be honest, I'm not good on this at all, you know. So I didn't graduate. I don't have the diploma. I stopped because I was focused just on basketball. Start playing first and then coaching. So I don't know exactly what I could do if I wasn't involved with basketball. I don't have an answer, honestly.
that's what I always say to people also. It's the same answer. I have no idea because I have no idea where I would have been without some sort of sport in my life anyways. And when you were in Marussia, you started, that was your first assistant coaching job. That's where you played your entire life. And that's where you started working with Billy, Vasilis, Spanoulis, Kill Bill. There's so many different names for him.
Yes.
What was he like when he was younger, when he was at that? I mean, at that age, what was he like? 16, right?
No, he came in Marussia, I think, in the age of 19, if I was wrong.
19?
Yes. From Larissa, from his team, Keravnos Larissas. And after 2-3 years, I was assistant coach with Marussia of Panagiotis Giannakis. I think 1 year we played this FIBA competition final with Vasilis. I was fourth assistant in Marussia, you know.
I didn't know they had that many assistants in Greece back then.
We had, because Panagiotis Giannakis was also always a very organized, and you know, in Marussia he brought his professionalism and the way of thinking, the way of how to be a champ, you know. And I was the guy to do the tough things, you know, a lot of video, you know, from video recording this say, not now with
yes
with all the programs that you have through internet, without synergy and without all of this great stuff that you have now. And I was a guy who was watching all day games and trying to transfer the information to the first assistant coach and to Panagiotis Giannakis. This was my job.
I talked to Xavi Pascual a couple of years ago, and he made me open my eyes to something that I never realized. He told me, he's like, some assistant coaches just want to be assistant coaches. They don't want the job of. And to me, like, that never registered in my mind as an ex-player. It's like, if I came in fourth place, I wanted to come in third place. If I came in third place, I wanted to come in second place. And during those times when you were, and I can only imagine what it was like to do the VHS videos and do the, because now it's so easy for some of these people that know technology. During those times, were you like, man, I need to be the boss? This is my goal is to be the head coach? Or were you content on being an assistant coach at that time?
I was head coach before in a small division teams in Greece. So, you know, in this kind of teams, you are not only the head coach, you are the assistant also, you are the team manager, you are the guy who is bringing the balls in the practice. This is the situation. And I was also the guy who was trying to find some sponsors, you know. I was doing everything, not only
you did
me,
everything.
All the coaches in this level are doing this. So I can say that it was a great school for me doing this. I was a little bit tired doing this, doing all the things and being emotional, you know, with the result finally, because I had to do everything. When I had this offer from Coach Giannakis, I started thinking, okay, let's... I was also a Marussi player in the past, so it was a good opportunity for me to start being assistant coach. And also, what I really believe is that if you do the job of the assistant coach, of the fourth coach, the third, the second, the head coach, you know basketball from all the... You have the whole image of this job, you know, and then I can appreciate the job that my assistant coaches are doing. And I can understand what kind of job they really do. I really believe that. I wasn't having Coach Giannakis as a head coach is just... I need to have my ears open, you know, and to do whatever I could, you know, just for the team to succeed. But I couldn't think about the future. Just think that whenever, after my 3 years of being assistant coach in Marussi, when I had my first offer as head coach in Larissa, I didn't want to get that job. I preferred to stay as an assistant coach in Marussi, although that opportunity that I had in Larissa probably opened my future, you know. But in the beginning, I didn't want to leave Marussi. I was okay. I was feeling great with this job, with this opportunity. I did it not with so much, how can I say? My desire wasn't to be a head coach in another city of Greece, to move on, you know, from my house, from my family, and start being head coach somewhere else. But of course, it was a great, finally, decision.
When you grab a team for the first time, and you've been through the whole process of being the fourth assistant, the third assistant, and moving up, you feel it's as you said, the experience of you learning. It's like, what, you know, I was talking to one of the producers the other day at IMG, and I was like, you know, someday I just want to sit in the truck and learn what everybody else does, because I've never had that opportunity to learn the inside parts and see what the people are doing to me. And when you see a coach like, I mean, I think the two guys that come to my mind, Pablo Laso and Sardas Yasekevicius, they jumped right into it. Is that a disadvantage for them because they don't understand the process of everything that comes before?
I cannot say that, Joe. I think it depends on the person, you know. It's how much respectful you are for your colleagues, you know, and then to try to be in their position and to understand what they do and through what difficult things they pass. You know, it's, Pablo was a player in Real Madrid, and Saras was something that everybody knows, you know, as a player. So for them, it was easier to make the transition as a head coach in the highest level. You understand what I mean? First of all, because they play in this level and they knew, and of course, because of the reputation that they have, it was easier for them to get a very good job. I wasn't in this position, so I had to pass through a process of a lot of years growing up as a professional in this job, you know.
I feel like players that go right into coaching, sometimes they're learning as they start. So maybe even the assistant coaches are teaching them.
Yes, of course. I'm not telling this about Pablo or Saras, but maybe in the beginning of your career, it's very good to have one very experienced assistant, one very experienced general manager to help you in your first seasons, you know.
What do you think was your, when was your biggest break? Was it taking that head coaching job, leaving Marussi? Was that your biggest break, or was that like your first big opportunity?
Yes, probably yes. This job in Larissa was a great opportunity because I became head coach in the first division of Greece in a team that we played in European competition, a playoff team, and probably the years that the domestic league was much better than now because of the crisis, because of the, you know, every league right now looks like, I cannot say worst, but in another level, because in Greece, for example, in the past 12, 14 years ago, there will be 12, 14 very strong teams, you know, and to achieve the playoffs was really tough. It was really difficult. Now it's not like this. There are teams that, I don't have to say that because...
I think it's the same all over Europe now, because even in Spain, you know, when I was around and when I played, it was you just felt like the league was so much more competitive on a weekly basis. Than
you think
now.
So about the Spanish league? You know, from my experience in Barcelona, it was really tough. You know, you could lose everywhere. You know, it's
in Greece, but in other
leagues like Italian, like Greek league, even like VTB now, you know, the bottom teams are not so strong.
Yeah. Sometimes for a bigger team, that's difficult too, because it's more difficult to get motivated to play some games like that.
This is a nightmare for all the coaches, believe me. I'm talking with all the EuroLeague coaches. The Sunday game in the domestic league with a small team is really like a nightmare. How you can motivate your players, how they can play with speed, with desire, you know, they are walking. The thing is that probably in the Spanish league, if you are like this, lose, you can lose the game. In Greek league, it's really difficult to lose, even if you are without motivation, without energy, you know.
What did it feel like for you to be named Greek basketball coach of the year? After everything that you've gone through as far as your injuries and kind of climbing up that mountain, is that like a special reward for a coach as it would be for a player?
To be honest, not for me. It wasn't like this. This year, I think, with Marussia as a head coach, we had an excellent season in EuroLeague with a team with 1.2 million budget, you know, 1.2, maybe the smaller budget in EuroLeague history. And we achieved the playoffs. We had qualification round. And we beat Ars Salonikis and Alba Berlin. And then we play in the group. And then we qualified in the top 16, talking about great achievement for our team. And we had the opportunity to go even to the playoffs. We beat Panathinaikos, who was Partizan Maccabi in the top 16. Panathinaikos was European champion the previous year. And then we end up in the domestic league third after Olympiacos Panathinaikos, which was like to be a champion.
Of course.
Yes. So the same time that we play so many games in EuroLeague, we competed also in the domestic league. We end up third. It was really a great season for us.
Then there were some financial issues that forced you to leave.
No, was that generally for the club? No, not only for me. Yes.
Were you okay with that exit, or were you disappointed because you were kind of building?
It wasn't a personal disappointment about my job or my money or about my future. It was basically for our team because I had always I have feelings for this team. I was a player from since I was a kid, you know, and through this situation, Marussia never been in the same level again. So it wasn't easy, you know, not for my future. Somehow I believe with this good season that we had that I could have another good opportunity, and it was Panionios after. One very traditional, you know, Greek team, which was in a bad situation when I went, I think, in November. But after 1 year, we end up also second, third, in the same, like Marus, like after Olympiacos Panathinaikos, we end up in a good, in a really good spot.
Yeah, and you had that team qualify for the EuroLeague also.
Yes.
Was it the second year that you guys qualified for EuroLeague?
No, it was the second year. The first year, we didn't qualify even in the playoffs. We just saved the category, you know, we didn't fall down. But the second year, we finished third, and we won the EuroLeague spot, you know. Of course, we didn't play never in EuroLeague, because EuroLeague is giving only two tickets in the domestic league, but it is what it is, yes.
When you go to Olympiacos your first time, I've always been, this is like, to me, the most interesting part of this whole story, is you get there as, of course, one of the most legendary coaches of all time, and Dušan, rest in peace. And you know, we always one of my favorite guys. And he was just such a, other than being a great coach, he was such a nice guy.
I don't remember you worked with him, no?
No. I never got to. I played with Selko. That was enough. I didn't need another one like him.
Correct.
with one of those guys is enough for me. But, you know, they say, and not only do we say this, but it's true, that one of the hardest things to do in EuroLeague is to be back-to-back champions, to win 2 years in a row.
Yes.
And this team did it in 2012 with Dušan. And to me, it's like, it's always hard to win back-to-back, even if you have the same coach. But the next year, a new coach comes in, which is you, and you get the remains of the year before, because the normal thing for teams to do is like take it, you know, like, we won it, let's relax and move
always,
on.
Always. That's why it's so rare, you know, to see, right. Not only in basketball, in football also, you know, it's...
Everywhere.
Yes, it's really rare. I don't know what is exactly the reason. The reason, I thought a lot of times, what is the reason that a very strong European team who wins the championship in Europe, why they don't repeat it? You know, probably one is the motivation. You work like to your limits to achieve the top, you know, the title. Maybe then all the players, they want a little bit more piece of cake. And I'm not right. talking only about money, of course, because wherever you are a European champion, you need to, you must have better contract, you know. But also it's the piece of cake of the play, of the game. You know, it's you need some more shots, some more responsibility. And it's really difficult to repeat it. That's why it's really rare in the history.
I think the format also obviously makes it difficult because it's a Final Four.
Exactly.
Maybe if it was a 5 or 7 game playoff, you'd see more repeat teams. But the fact that, and when I thought about this, my first initial reaction when I researched this was, it would be more difficult for a team to repeat having a new coach. But then when you really think about it deeply, you say, maybe that's even easier because you're putting in new philosophies, you're motivating the team a different way. I don't know. I mean, for you, what were your feelings going in? Because as a player, I would be like, man, nobody ever repeats, and I'm going to sign for Olympiacos now that just won the championship last year. Maybe that's not such a good thing.
Listen, when I had the offer from Olympiacos owners about this job, you know, I was really happy. Maybe one of the happiest moments of my life, because I cannot hide it. I'm an Olympiacos fan since I was a kid, you know.
That was going to be one of my questions to you coming up. I was like, because
in Greece, everybody knows that. You know, I grew up in the football and basketball game of Olympiacos, being a fan of the club, you know. So then when I had this opportunity for this job, I couldn't, you know, deny it. It's that simple. One of the happiest days of my life was when I signed with Olympiacos the contract. I knew, of course, that it's going to be a really difficult job. Olympiacos was champion in the domestic league and also a European champion, you know, a EuroLeague champion. So I knew that I had a mountain to climb. I tried to keep a lot of things that Dušan Ivković did in the past, even some offensive plays. Of course, my philosophy was completely different, you know. Also, the roster, I changed a lot of the small things. I mean, if I remember well, 3 or 4 new players that we signed this year. And I cannot hide it. It was a really difficult process and really painful, you know, losing games. Always I was the guy that everybody saw. This is the guy who was responsible for every loss, you know. But also, Olympiacos in the previous season had a tough season in EuroLeague, you know. Wasn't easy, but through this process, you know, through this painful process, we develop our game, we grow up as a team, and we were ready finally to the Final Four to compete against the best teams in Europe. It wasn't easy, of course.
Were there times when people were pointing the finger at you where you were thinking, man, I'd like to be the fourth assistant coach again?
No, you never, you know, it's just, you know, you go to the sea and you have to swim, you know, it's there is no other way, you know.
Obviously, we know you coached, you know, with Vasilis, you coached Pinthesis. Your EuroLeague record was 44-18 during that time, which is 70% winning percentage, which is extremely impressive. Yet when you coach a team like Olympiacos, Panathinaikos, Real Madrid, you were criticized more for the domestic part of the championship.
Correct.
How do you win the fans? I mean, if you know, if you do well in EuroLeague, you have to do well in another one. If you do well in the Greek championship and you don't do well in the EuroLeague, how do you make people happy?
When you are in Olympiakos, you have to win every game. You don't have right to lose. You know, it's that simple. But I believe in all the big clubs in Europe, you know, this is the situation. You know, you cannot deny it. It's, if you want to be a coach in these kind of teams, a lot of people will be critical to you in everything, you know, and it's normal. Especially the Mediterraneans, you know, the guys in the South Europe, they cannot accept, you know, losing. It's that simple. Right. There are a lot of people in Greece that they say that you love more the win than your team, you know, than your club. Yeah. And it's true, more or less, you know. Even if you have, let's say, budget fourth or fifth time less than the most expensive clubs in Europe, you know, everybody is demanding about, you know, to win them, you know, to beat them. So it is what it is, you know, you accept it or no.
It's so difficult in Greece because one of the most beautiful things that when I played against Greek teams in Greece, or when I did play in Greece with Ardesi and Ike, the most beautiful thing is the passion that the Greek fans have, but it's also the worst thing at the same time.
Exactly.
It's such an extreme.
Yes, for the foreigners, it's not easy to understand that, you know, but for us that we grow up in this situation, it's something normal. That's why sometimes I believe that the Greek coaches are ready to, if they coach in here, they can coach everywhere because the pressure is really high. For example, let me tell you something. You were a player in Real Madrid and you had a great team, you know, with Sabonis, you. I remember the final against Olympiakos. You remember, of course.
Of course, yeah.
Let's say for Olympiakos, losing the last game of the European competition was a real nightmare, you know. Even if you had an excellent season, you qualified to the Final Four, you play the final, and then you lose from a very strong team like Real Madrid those years. So everybody then, nobody is going to give you a credit, you know, after that. We just lost. Yeah, that simple.
The same thing is, this, it's the same thing here in Real Madrid, but it's not as passionate, it's not as strong. I mean, you know, the media, the fans, everything, but it's like a couple levels below what it is once you get to Greece, and it's a whole different thing, which I'll get, again, I don't say it in a bad way because I think it's beautiful.
I don't know. It's not a secret, but when you lose a derby in Greece, you have to hide. You know, you cannot go out to the supermarket for a couple of days or to go out, you know, because everybody will start talking to you. So that's why when I was in Russia, nobody knew me. When I was going to a shopping mall or something like this, it was fantastic. No, nobody knew that who I was, you know, and nobody was telling anything.
It's beautiful. Isn't that beautiful?
But yes, this is a beautiful part of this job.
You could do anything you want. And you know, cause I can remember after losing games against Barcelona, like in the finals or whatever, man, it wasn't that the fans weren't as bad here as they would have been in Greece. But it's like, I didn't want to see anybody either. It didn't matter. So, you know, I didn't want anybody to even say anything nice to me or mean to me. I didn't care. I just couldn't leave the house.
Exactly, yes.
When you left the Olympia, in my research, it says that one, you know, we do, a couple of different guys do our research for us.
Yes.
And I do my part. And it says that, you know, after an opening day derby defeat to Panathinaikos at the start of the 2014-15 season, you left your post. What happened? I know that's not... Not just because you lost the Panathinaikos, you left. There's more than that.
Yes. No, basically it was because of this. We lost also the domestic league the previous season with me as a coach. And probably the opening game was with Panathinaikos in the cup, in a game away. So we lost with buzzer beater, 1 point. And the fans were there in our gym waiting for us when we came back from Panathinaikos home court. And, you know, it was more than passionate, you know. It was like they wanted to push things to me to, you know, to give up. How can I say?
They wanted you to quit.
Yeah, to quit, exactly. So when I saw these kind of feelings to the crowd, you know, these persons that they externalize with this bad way their feelings, I decided by myself to leave, you know. It was, I said, that's enough for me, you know, I have to stop it. although that it wasn't easy. You know?
In any way, did that change your attitude towards the club? Like you said, you grew up loving Olympiacos and the club.
No. That never changes. You know, I don't know for you, for the American guys, but you know, in Greece, we say that you cannot change ever. Team, you know, same you start me, being yeah. Olympiacos fan, you will die Olympiacos fan. You cannot right. be, after a few years, some other team fan.
When you were younger and you were an Olympiacos fan, were you like one of those, were you one of those
no.
crazy guys going nuts?
No, I've never been, to be honest. I was always, you know, positive and supportive to any coach that we had in the football team, to any player, you know. Of course, there were players that I liked more. But I wasn't that kind of guy, you know, cursing to the coach, to the players, losing when we're losing game. I wasn't that guy.
I think when you play the game, you have more of a respect for everybody who's involved.
Exactly.
Than when you don't play it. So when you left there, you took a year off. And I'm always so interested in what coaches do, because I've seen, like, you know, Selko has taken, you know, the year off. Other coaches have taken that sabbatical for a year. What was your year for? Was it just to get away? Was it to become better, learn?
I will tell you, first of all, it's completely different situation from, exactly, for example, what Zeliko did. Zeliko decided to be out of the sport for 1 year and to do whatever he wanted to do. I didn't decide. I mean, I decided, but fans forced me to decide that. So I lost my job, you know, early in the season. For me, it was a really difficult and painful situation. All those months, I had just one offer after 2-3 months from a Turkish team, but I didn't get it. So I start, you know, being involved with all the things of basketball, you know, watching games, basically NBA that I love more, European basketball, European leagues. I had the chance to visit the Copa del Rey in Gran Canaria, in Las Palmas, you know, just things like this. Basketball, but not from outside, you know, watching a lot, learning a lot, things like this. Talking with a lot of people of basketball. This was my daily process every, you know, all those months.
Was it with an intention to come back, or was it with an intention to, like, see if this is really what I want to do anymore? After, like, a bad experience?
For 1-2 months, it was the second, that's what you said. Is this job for me, you know, is it normal to have this in your life, you know? This is the question mark always. As we said with our assistant coaches here, it's this job, when you are out, you want so much deadly to go in, to get in. And when you are in, you start thinking that, you know, I'm fed up, you know, it's enough for me, I want to go out. After 10, 15, 20 days of vacations, it's again, it's the same, you know, the adrenaline that you need, that you learn to live with, is always this. So for 1-2 months, I had this perspective that, you know, do I deserve to live these kind of things? But of course, then I decided that I have to continue.
It amazes me, because I always talk about this with players also, and coaches have the same thing. It amazes me that, like, 2 years before that, you're hoisting up a EuroLeague championship trophy and hugging your players, and like you've achieved the maximum that you could ever believe that you could achieve as a coach. And then just 2 years later, you're thinking about, like, never going back again. The ups and downs of being an athlete or a coach in a sport are incredibly extreme, because your highest level and your lowest level are the best and the worst, you know?
I don't have to add anything. You just said it as it is, you know. I completely agree. It's like all the guys that they are working this level are dealing with some extreme feelings, you know? High and low, maybe in the same week sometimes, not
exactly.
Like 2 years. So you need to be ready. So I think that we learn to live with those kind of feelings, and then it's really difficult for us to live without them, you know. I really believe that stopping being a basketball coach, how can I live without those feelings?
So do you feel like you needed, because a player really can't do that, because their playing career is much shorter. A player just can't say, hey, I'm going to take a year off and walk away. But during that year, did you feel like more of a passion for the game, even though you hit rock bottom, let's say, as a coach? Did you feel like you came back with more energy, with more knowledge, with more passion?
Yes, after 2-3 months, you start thinking positive and start, you know, think that you need to be part of basketball again. So you have a desire, you have a motivation to prove again that you are a good coach or you're a good player or whatever, you know. And I just needed a good opportunity.
And Locomotive was that opportunity.
Yes, you know.
But you, I don't know you well enough, but I know that you're very Greek.
Yes.
This was going to be your first move outside of a beautiful country. And you're going to Russia on top of it.
And the south of Russia, you know, Krasnodar. But yeah. Krasnodar was a really better place than what I believed before. You know, it's the weather is completely better than Moscow, for example, on north of Russia. And the fans, you know, the club was really supportive, warm audience, comparing to all the other Russian teams, you know. And of course, we had a really good team. It was a fantastic year.
That year was incredible for you guys. I thought that was... With the playoff win over Barcelona and going to the Final Four, and I still remember that Final Four game. I felt the whole time you guys won that game.
Yeah, I have great memories from this season. Basically, we had a bunch of fantastic players, persons, and also we had the luck that nobody had a serious injury. You know, because always is important to have luck on this in this part of basketball. You know, about health. And we end up, you know, playing third in EuroLeague. We end up playing semi-final in the Final Four for Lokomotiv. You know, that's a huge achievement, you know, accomplishment. You know, how can I say? And also the basketball that we played, it was really, in my opinion, attractive. You know, it was a basketball without a classic center, but with a lot of, you know, mobile forwards and fantastic guards. You know, decision makers, we had a really good team, you know.
In a situation like that, do you, as a coach, do you maintain your philosophy as a basketball coach, or do you have to change with the team that you have? Do you have to adjust certain things? Like you said, you didn't play with the classic big men, you opened up the floor more. Did you have to change anything about your philosophy?
I changed, yes, a few things, but basically it's what kind of group of players you have, you know, what the characteristics of the players that you have. So we had Anthony Randolph, we have Victor Claver, and we have Chris Singleton. Of course, I brought those guys, and I realized that, you know, having so talented players that they have the size and they have the quality to play face to the basket or sometimes back to the basket. And they can switch on defense or they can run the court really fast. Might be a weapon, you know, and not a weakness. So we work, but, you know, we had to be on the same page, everybody. And thank God we had Malcolm Delaney and Dondi Draper, the guards and the decision makers that they really believe in this prospect, you know, in this project, excuse me. And they follow, you know, we were in the same page, everybody, you know, and that's why finally we succeed.
As a coach, you kind of fly under the radar, to say the least. You know, you're there all the time. Every team that you've coached, even like lower teams with less budgets, you've always even achieved the EuroLeague or whatever. Do you consider yourself an easy coach? Do you consider yourself a player's coach? Are you more difficult on guys? I see you in games, and sometimes you get angry in games, but you're normally pretty calm and cool.
You know, I can say that I don't want to be to overcoach. You know, this is my philosophy. I really love to see the players inside the court to express their talent, you know. Of course, to have specific principles, you know, rules. But I love to let them, you know, express their talent. I'm not the coach that decides to, in every offense, who is going to make the decision of who is going to score, who is going to take the shot. I don't want to be like that. Because I really believe that developing this through the season, you know, you can get finally big results. Because this is my philosophy. This is how, you know, and it wasn't from the beginning. This is my theory. Is this, you know, when the players are working, playing sometimes with their instinct and working, learning how to play together, finally the level of this team, the limit of this team is really higher.
If you were 24 again and you were healthy playing basketball, would you want to play for yourself?
It depends. You know, it's always about the human chemistry. You know, it's with some people you can be really friendly, really supportive. With some other, no. You know, it's not only from me to the players, but from some players to me. You know, it's kind of chemistry that you cannot be friend with everybody. You cannot be work with everybody. I was unfair to some players, and some players were unfair to me. You know, but that's life. You know,
I think that's an interesting perspective because a lot of coaches just think it's a one-way relationship when it's really not. It's a two-way relationship. Regardless, each person has to respect the other person, and I think when a player feels respected, you'll have more respect also. But you also, as a coach, you have to be the boss. There's a fine line of respect and friendship.
You know, Joe, basketball changes. You know, 20 years ago, the basketball coach had to be a dictator. You know, now this is not like this. I can say that basketball goes, especially to the States, to the United States, goes to the other way. You know, where the players are the bosses. The franchise players are the bosses. And of course, I don't like that. But this is the new era in basketball. You know, right now, this is a players' league. You know, even EuroLeague started to be like this.
What do you think, in your opinion, changed that so-called dictatorship that it was back, you know, when I played and you played for coaches that it was your way, it was my way or no way, you know, and the players didn't have much of a say in things. What changed over the years? Was it did the coaches soften up or did the players become more powerful?
The second one, first of all, they earn a lot of money. Sometimes, for example, in the United States, the money that the franchise players are earning are really more than the coaches, first of all. Second is that the fans basically love the players, not the coaches.
Right.
Except if we are talking about the NCAA, I don't know, that players are leaving, but the coaches are always there. But the society is changing, you know, it's the world is changing. So I don't believe that it's a good period for dictators, you know. Of course, democracy in basketball always is a question mark, you know, who is the guy who finally decides. But I can say that I agree with this. Must be a league for the player, a players' league, not a coaches' league. Even that in Europe, the influence of the coaches sometimes more than in the States.
In Lokomotiv, you finish off, you beat Barcelona to get into the Final Four. And then, of course, this is so typical for me, like with big teams like Panathinaikos, Olympiacos, Real Madrid. When that happens, they want to sign you right away. And that's what Barcelona did. They went and brought you in.
After the season of Lokomotiv, I had a lot of offers from the highest level teams.
Right.
So I decided to go to Barcelona, although that finally it wasn't a good decision, not because of the great club and the fantastic opportunity, but because of the timing. It was a really difficult timing for the club, you know, and without in my position to choose the players, to choose the roster. We had a lot of players with contracts from the previous seasons, but a lot of things. Barcelona in this period, in a traditional situation, Real Madrid was really strong with domestic players in there, you know, best momentum, and it was a difficult process for me.
Would you say, I think I know the answer to this question. Was this the most difficult season of your career?
Definitely, you know, 100%.
Yeah, and how did you handle that mentally, emotionally? I mean, because you were blamed a lot for something, like you said, that was already there. I mean, you stepped into it, and on top of it, while you were there, injuries started to mount up, and you didn't have the team that you were actually even given to. So, do you justify that somewhere in your mind, or do you feel like you did something wrong? I mean, because you don't get as far as you've gotten in life without looking in the mirror and blaming yourself and trying to be better.
Of course, it was both. You know, first of all, I was blaming myself. You know, because whatever you feel the whole disappointment of the fans, you think that you are responsible. And Barcelona is a fantastic club. It's a great club. You know, it's I don't regret that I took this opportunity, although that finally the result was really bad. But to be honest, we had a lot of injuries. You know, through the first day I went, everything happened against us. And of course, we had a team with a lot of veterans, and it was the new format of EuroLeague was really tough. You know, For example, playing with a lot of veterans in Friday in Kazan and playing Sunday morning in Bilbao or in Gran Canaria, for them was really difficult to adjust, to play well 2-3 games in a row. That's why we have a lot of injuries. And of course, maybe the players that they couldn't fit to my system. I tried to play their basketball, but finally it wasn't a good combination, you know. But it wasn't just part of me, you know, because the next season from when I left, it was the same. Barcelona failed again.
Right, exactly. And that was my next question, is the next season was pretty much the same for Barcelona, because they went through about 3 years after. You just happened to be, I think, like the first one.
Yes.
To show up in that moment. Because Madrid and Barcelona are like Olympiacos and Panathinaikos. They're cycles.
Exactly.
For 5 years, one team's here, another team's here. For the other 5 years.
Yes.
And you, unfortunately, were in the beginning of it. But the next year, you go to Kimki and you guide this team to a playoff spot in a Euroleague, and you almost get to the Final Four.
Yes, it was a good response for me. You know, I felt really good, because I cannot say that I was starting doubting about myself, but I felt really bad because I left the club. I wanted so much to continue. And when I had the opportunity with Kimki, the next year we qualified in the playoffs for the first time in their history. And we were, for one game, ready to go to the Final Four, and Barcelona was out of the playoffs. So it was kind of, I cannot say feeling great about Barca, but I was feeling good for me.
You felt somewhat justified or vindicated, maybe, like
kind of.
No matter how humble we try to be, there's always that competitive spirit in our body that's like, it was good to see them do bad, and it's good for me to see me do good.
I have to admit it, you know, although that I have great feelings about Barcelona, I have a lot of friends there. My family, we stayed there for 4 or 5 years all together. We stayed in Barcelona and I have great feelings about the city, about the club. But it's okay. It's a human, you know, reaction.
Right. Yeah. First thing you mentioned when you went to Russia the first time was the weather, because it was down south. It was a little bit better than Moscow. But then in Kimki, coming from Greece, how's that?
You know, it's really difficult, you know. But I can say, wherever you feel happy in your job, everything else comes second, you know. If you are miserable, if you feel sad in your job, because our job right now, it's 10 months process without day offs, as you know, a lot of games, a lot of trips. So the most important thing is to feel good in your job, you know, to have good relationship with the players, with the front office, with your colleagues, with your, you know, coaching staff, with the fans. Whatever this happens, you can avoid a little bit being miserable about the weather, about the snow or things like this. Of course, it's not easy for a Mediterranean, for a guy who is Greek, to live in Moscow and to, you know, a sunny day, it was once in 6 months, you know.
Right.
It's really difficult, but it is what it is, you know.
After this time, now you're sitting here talking to me with this the hoodie on, the sweatshirt, Olympiacos basketball, and you're back. You came back in a really, really difficult situation. You we'll go back to the Barcelona thing where we talked about the ups and the downs, and Olympiacos was going through some very difficult times, tumultuous times, to say it correctly. And you show up being the third head coach in the same season.
To be honest, Joe, it wasn't the decision that I wanted to take. You know, I was in vacations in Greece, coming from Barcelona, and when the owners of the club invited me for a talk about this opportunity, and I was really negative. I didn't want to come back again.
Is it because of what happened before, or is it because of the situation that the club
because
was in at that time?
Because of a combination of a lot of things. Once working abroad, I appreciated it at that time, and I wanted to continue working abroad. Second, because I left with Olympiacos with this way. And third, because Olympiacos was in a really difficult situation, you know, transitional situation. To become again a winning team, you had to do a lot of things, you know. And in the first conversation that I had with the owners, I was negative. You know, I said no. I said, let's talk again in the summer, during the summer. But they had to take a decision early. And we had a second, you know, conversation. And to be honest, I took the professional decision to come back, not an emotional decision to come back. Because I heard things from the owners that I wanted to hear, you know.
And you come into a team that is gone through so much the 2 years before that and going through this year with the change of coaches. And also, I mean, unfortunately, in this sport, the players age and they get older, and you grab a team that's I don't want to say old, but you know they're more on their way down than they are on their way up.
Exactly.
And did you take that into consideration too? Because you have to start thinking also, not only do I have to coach this team, I have to rebuild also. And it's going to be difficult to rebuild with guys like Spanoulis and Princesses, because those are gods. And
that's why I was so skeptical to come back again, because those guys are legends in Greek basketball, and of course in Olympiacos basketball, you know, the fans are loving them, and because they achieved a lot of things with the club the last 10 years. And it wasn't a good momentum because they are close to close their career, you know, close right. to finish their career. So it is a transitional period, and it's a rebuilding of this team. Probably the owners decided that I was the guy, that I am able to do this. It wasn't easy, you know, it wasn't easy to convince anybody about, you know, what is realistic and what is not. But okay, I did it, I decided to take this job and to do it. And of course, I have the support of the club, I mean about the owners. And suddenly the fans also are very supportive, probably because of the basketball we play. I think we play good basketball. We are moving forward, we are making steps to the right direction. So it's not an easy process, you know. Spanoulis already stopped playing, but retired. Yorgos Prindis is in the age of 37. EuroLeague is very competitive right now. A lot of games, a lot of physicality. Sometimes the motivation goes down a little bit, because if you play 20 years in the league, you know, I can understand how those players are thinking, you know, really difficult for them. And I'm really fan of them, you know, how they did it. But it's really tough. For the veterans right now, EuroLeague is a tough league, you know. You need to be fresh. You need to be always energetic. You need to have energy every 2 days to play in the highest level. With the speed that basketball has right now, it's not easy.
I always look at it, and you know, in a good way or a bad way, I compare it to when I was a player and what happened back in my days. And I always think to myself, I'm like, man, it's nice now that you see teams like Barcelona with Juan Carlos, and teams like Olympiacos with Yorgos and with Vasilis, and Madrid with Yui and Felipe Reyes. It's a beautiful thing as a player to have that support of your club, that like when I played back in the day, the minute you stopped producing, you were gone.
Really, yeah. You felt that job because you were a foreigner probably in your teams.
Maybe, but even back then, you didn't see that dedication, at least in Spain, to the player. You know, it was like, and maybe the player wasn't loyal either. Maybe the player wanted to move on, like you said, and make more money somewhere else. You know,
I think it's the special connection with a guy who is the same nationality with you. You know, I mean, Juan Carlos is a Catalan. You know, Jul and are from Madrid, and Reyes and Spanoulis are pretty from Greece. So The fans are having a special connection with them. You know, it's difficult
But there comes a moment on the professional side as a club, you have to say, okay, we're still here to win championships, and we need players that can play every day.
This is the difficult part of my job now, and also from the big clubs, you know. The players have to decide when they have to retire. You know?
But we never know when to retire. We always think, coach, but it was my last year, and all of a sudden I'd go out and score 20 points. The first thing in my head is I could do this for 3 more years, and there's no way.
Yes. Correct.
I always said it was, you know, of course, Spanoulis is my favorite player of all time in Europe. I think he's the greatest player to ever play in Europe. But when you saw him like a couple of years ago before retirement come out and score 20 points, I'm like, man, that's the worst thing for the team, because he might not be able to do that for the next 2 nights now.
Yes, it's difficult. You know, EuroLeague, the new format of EuroLeague didn't help those guys, those players, you know.
It makes it more difficult for them.
And also, I believe that it's difficult right now to base on one player, even if this guy is legendary, he's a fantastic player. Right now, how many games this player can compete in the highest level, can play fantastic, you know, 8 times per year. It's not easy. So probably you need to base on your team basketball, if you want to have better record, you know.
I like what you're doing with the team now. We could sit here and talk about the fact that you're right now you're sitting in fourth place and you have a possibility of getting a home court advantage. I know you probably look at a few games that you've lost that I've been following you guys and you're like, man, if we would have just, you know, two or three games that we really could have won would have put us in a better position. But I think what you said earlier is the most important thing. You know, you went to Olympiacos the first time and you won a championship right away. Now you're going the other way. You know now you're slowly building up. Which is better? Which is easier? Which is more fun? Which is better as a coach? Which one? I mean, everybody wants to win a championship right away, but then who knows what happens after?
I don't know really. I think you need to work for the day. You know, for the next practice, for the next game, and you need to enjoy what you do, and also always you need to be motivated to be better in your job, to make your team play better. I can think that both things are very interesting, you know, keeping a champions team in the same, to win the league again, or to rebuild the team with the reputation that Olympiacos has in European basketball is not easy. And of course, it's not only my responsibility. Always I believe in the team effort. You know, I have the support of the owners. I have the support of the front office, of everybody. The organization Olympiacos is really great. People around ready to help in everything, in any direction. And also positive players, which is very important. You know, always you need that. And of course, we have conflicts every day, you know, with the players. The players are having big ego always, you know, and you need to make them believe in something, you know. Sometimes you need to be aggressive on them. You have conflicts, you have arguments, but you still have to be in the same page, finally, you know. It's never easy, you know. Both processes, both situations are difficult, you know. But in that time, I really enjoy that, you know. First of all, what the club, the owners asked for me is to be in the top eight again, you know, and to be in the playoff spot again. So this is what they asked me. They didn't ask me in my job this year just to go to the final. And because the previous time I had bonus only for EuroLeague title, not even in the Final Four. And now I had bonus for the top eight.
So you're telling me you have you got one bonus and you're pretty close to another one. So when I come to Athens, you could take me out to dinner.
Yes, whatever you can agree. So we have great, you know, food here and fantastic places close to the sea.
Of course.
It's going to be my pleasure. But I have one bonus already, yes. But of course, basketball is not a bonus. You know, bonuses come second, you know.
Right, of course.
First, always is the motivation, the desire to win, you know. And we have three games in front of us. The first one is really difficult. All are difficult. But let's see finally what when the post season finishes, in which position we're going to finish.
All right, my last question to you now before we finish and we do the test real quick, our famous EuroLeague test. My last question is, let's say you take this team now and you build them up.
Yes.
And you do everything you're supposed to do. Maybe playoffs this year. Maybe you go to the Final Four this year. Maybe next year to a final, whatever. And then does a coach always live with the understanding that maybe in like 6 months or a year from now or 2 years from now, this could all go back downhill again. And I mean, I know you can't live that way day to day, but you have to always be aware of the fact that this can go south at any time. What's that like to deal with on a daily, monthly, yearly basis?
I don't have the answer. I'm sorry you do about that, but
you've been through all of it. You've done it all, and you still don't know.
I still don't know. I don't have any advice to give to anybody. I think that you need to live the day. You know, just you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I had great teams in the past that they had a lot of injuries, for example. I never know when my job is going to finish, you know, not even in Olympiacos generally. You know, it's maybe finishing Olympiacos, I could not have any offer again.
Right.
So you need to be ready for everything, you know, especially in our life, in sports life, you know, it's not easy. Nothing is easy. That's why I say I live my life here. I'm happy to be here. And let's try to do our best, me and the club, and finally this summer to see what we did.
Well, I could personally say as a fan, It's nice to see you guys back up there again because just the name. And I know Panathinaikos is having a difficult year, but it's always nice to see the two Greek teams up there.
Thank you very much.
All right, you ready for
about
the test?
About this test and about this quiz that you do, honestly, I am the worst person in the world, you know. I'm sure that I'm not going to find any answer, you know, in the questions.
The crossover test.
All right, coach. Here we go. You ready? You've already warned me that you're not good at these things, and I'm not good at them either, but so I hate to do them, but this is a lot of fun. We've had a lot of fun with coaches and with players. Right now, I have five questions. Each one is worth a different amount of points. Number one is worth 10 points. Number two is worth 20, 330, 440, 550. All right?
Finally, I will have 0 points, believe me.
No, there's definitely a couple of them you're going to get. And I really think you're going to be able to get the 50-point one, which you might be able to beat. We have Nicola Melli and Gersan Yavaseli are tied with 100 points this year. Oh, and Kevin Punter also. Kevin Punter is with 100 points. He was a Euro Cup guy, so we're still questioning that one. But the first question, and this is, they go easy to harder, but I think you're going to be fine. Who's the current president of LDLC ASVEL? The Irvan.
Now?
Yes.
Parker.
Yes, exactly, right? You didn't say Tony Parker, but I'll give you the answer anyways.
I'm sorry, Tony Parker.
Tony Parker. We'll give you that one because it was worth 10 points. So you got 10. So see, you're doing good. You feel comfortable.
This is easier than, you know, it's for a kindergarten, you know. It's a...
Question number two. Who is leading the EuroLeague this season in 3-point shots made?
Okay, can I have a few seconds to think?
Yeah, of course.
3-point shots made, okay? Maccabi?
But the player, not the team, the player.
Ah, who is the player?
Yes.
Maybe we'll begin.
You got it, my man. That's 20 points for you.
Okay.
That's very good. You have the 30. See, and I didn't think you were gonna get that one. That's good. I like that. All right, question number three could be another easy one for you. In which teams has Sasha Vezenkov professionally played for? Which three teams?
Okay, Olympiacos, Barcelona, and Naris.
There you go, 30 points, my man.
In Barcelona and Olympiacos, I was his coach. just find one more.
Look, you're up to 60 already. Now you go for the tie right here for 100 points. Which three players from your team played the most minutes in the 2013 championship game?
Okay. Spanoulis.
One for one.
Papanikolaou and Heinz.
Oh, man.
AC Law, maybe. Huh?
Yeah, you missed it by AC Law.
Yeah.
All right, but since you have 60 points,
yeah,
and this next question is worth 50, you can take the overall EuroLeague lead,
okay,
in this test if you get this last one. And this all goes, this one's gonna be really interesting. How many times have you played against the team coached by Sardas Yasikevicius, and how many of them have you won?
Give me some seconds to think.
Yeah, of course.
In Žalgiris, in EuroLeague level, you mean, in Žalgiris, I was in Chimki. I think we won twice. I think I have positive record, but I don't know. To be honest, I don't remember the games. How many?
You have to at least guess.
Let's say six games, and we won three or four. Let's say three. We have three in six games.
You guys played each other 9 times, and you're leading 5-4. You're close.
We still have one game, the last one in the postseason.
Coach, I want to thank you so much for taking this time out. I know, like you said, it's been a difficult schedule, difficult year.
No, I enjoy
every
it.
Time.
You are very good in the conversation. you helped me a lot.
Every time I get to sit down with you guys, I know it's an honor for me and a pleasure for me, but I know how much hours and change takes out of your day and everything you got going on. So from the bottom of my heart, I appreciate it. And best of luck to you this season, and hopefully I'll see you in Belgrade.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Joe. Good luck for everybody. Thank
you. Coach, good luck. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, Subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.